Sexual harassment in the workplace has dominated the national conversation this year, but it's not the only form of discrimination that's holding women back in their careers. A new investigation by the New York Times found that pregnancy discrimination is rampant inside America's biggest companies. And for women from all walks of life, it can have serious consequences for their careers and sometimes even for the health of their babies. I spoke with one of the reporters behind this series, Jessica Silver Greenberg, and we started by talking about how they found this problem. She said, on the heels of the Me Too movement, they asked themselves what issues are as systemic as much of a barrier in the workplace to women as the sexual harassment that the Me Too movement has brought to light.
What else is holding women back? What other kind of discriminatory forces are at work impeding women in their employment? Mm-hmm. And we started to talk to regulators, both on the state and the federal level. We talked to people at the EEOC. We talked to employment lawyers on both sides of this. And the same thing kept on coming up, which was there's still this very real problem of discrimination against pregnant women. So there is still a very real issue of women being punished both when they announce they're pregnant and then when they return from maternity leave.
Right. So tell us a little bit about what this looks like across the board. Like, this is not just for women in certain types of jobs, low-income women or women in Fortune 500 companies. It sounds like you found this everywhere.
We did. We were pretty stunned, I think, initially. So, you know, we started going into this story thinking, okay, so this is a problem, but we don't know the extent of it. And when we started looking deeper, we found just how widespread this is. So we found women who worked in finance, on Wall Street, at big white shoe law firms. So that is the kind of air-conditioned, like climate-controlled office buildings. If you're a white-collar employee, an executive, you're certainly not immune from this. So we found the pregnancy discrimination takes a certain form in those office places, and it tends to be slightly more subtle, although not always so. But so we found in those cases, like in the white-collar workforce, in these office towers and on Wall Street and in law firms, it was women announcing they were pregnant and then suddenly finding that they were no longer invited to the important client meetings. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of assumptions made on their behalf. So it was assumed that they couldn't travel, that they wouldn't want to be on the big calls, that they wouldn't want the most interesting work. They were passed over for promotions that they were in line to get before they announced their pregnancies. Mm-hmm. But it was all very subtle. Now, in the blue-collar workforce and in the low-wage workforce, we found it there too. So we found pregnancy discrimination at Walmart, the biggest employer in the country. And in those situations, the discrimination took a form that was less nuanced. So it was more, you know, pregnant women would ask for reprieves from heavy lifting. And they were told if they didn't want to do those jobs, they should just get up and leave.
Right. And in particular, on that level, there's a physical toll here. Like you reported on this phenomenon of many women in strenuous jobs who have to lift things or move things, et cetera, miscarrying at work as a result of employers refusing to accommodate them.
Yeah, we did. So for the majority of women, it's entirely safe to work through a pregnancy. But there is a subgroup, a group of women that gynecologists and OBGYNs have called the professional athletes of the American workforce. Mm-hmm. And those are people who are hoisting 50-pound boxes. They're pushing carts that are 200 pounds. And many of them were already high risk to begin with. So many of these women brought in doctor's notes saying that they needed for a certain period of time to abide by medical restrictions. And almost universally, like to a woman, they were denied those accommodations. And these are women who did not have the luxury of saying, well, you know, I'm going to choose my pregnancy over my paycheck. They couldn't do that. In many cases, they already had children at home and they relied on the income and the health insurance that they were getting through their employer. Yeah. So they just, despite not being accommodated, they just worked through what was going on.
So what are the laws here? Is it legal sometimes for employers to deny those kinds of accommodations?
Yes. So there are some fairly large loopholes in the only federal law that exists that protects pregnant women. So that law is 40 years old, and it's called the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. And what it says, it's a comparative right as opposed to an affirmative right. That's what it gives women. It basically says, if you, employer, are already accommodating a set group of workers who are not pregnant, who have been injured on the job, who, you know, have physical limitations of some kind, who are sick, who, you know, there it can be any number of reasons why those people have accommodations. But if you're already doing that, then if a pregnant woman asks for accommodations, you have to provide them. Mm-hmm. So it requires of employers that they already be accommodating workers. The biggest loophole here is that if you're not providing any accommodations to any of your workforce, if you're pushing everyone to extremes, then you are legally allowed to push pregnant women to those extremes too.
So I want to ask more about that, but I think we should move on to the next point, which is also this idea that pregnancy discrimination doesn't end when a mother gives birth. You also talk in this about how mothers' salaries are affected for the rest of their lives. This can be like a cumulative effect, right?
Yes. There's decades of research that show that pregnant women and returning mothers are perceived as being less competent, less dedicated. There was a really interesting study. So they sent out a batch of resumes to potential employers. And the resumes were identical except for one thing. So on one of the batches of resumes, I think it was something like 600 resumes, it said at the bottom under interests, it said that the potential employee was a member of the PTA, the Parent Teacher Association. And another batch of them did not have that. So that was a subtle indication to employers that this group of 600 women, again, with identical resumes to the other group, were mothers. And those women, the women that were identified in this subtle way, flagged as being mothers, were far less likely to be called back for an interview, like stunningly less likely. So I think for all the kind of gains in the workforce, there is this persistent perception bias that women who are returning after maternity leave face when they try to regain their footing.
Yeah. So then I guess lastly, I want to talk about any potential change that could be on the horizon here. Are there efforts, at least in the private sector, among some companies to fix these things?
Well, there is still some hope for fixing the legal landscape, so the laws. Every year since 2012, lawmakers in Congress have proposed something called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. And what that would do is it would basically mandate that employers provide these accommodations, the ones that we're describing, for women. Mm-hmm. And it's bipartisan. The challenge there is that since being introduced in 2012, every congressional session, it has so far not had a hearing. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't made it out of committee.
All right. Jessica Silver Greenberg with The New York Times. Thank you for your reporting.
Thanks for having me on.